Hey, and welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And it's our 100th episode.
Yeah, baby, Centurion, man.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
So, nice. Big stuff. This is great.
Absolutely. So, thanks to everybody for watching, for making us who we are. Thanks, Mom.
Completing us.
Yes, that's true. And we have a lot of show topics this week.
Yeah.
Visual Studio 2010.
We got a bunch of WPF utilities and samples.
That's right. And a few other goodies as well. Maybe a little surprise at the end.
Yeah, that's right.
So, top story. So, a lot of people are aware of the IntelliSense patch that came out for the Visual Studio 2010 release candidate. This impacted mostly people that were using touch PCs, tablet PCs.
Now, like the one we gave at PDC to everybody that attended?
Yeah, details. But now there's a second patch available as well. So, if you were affected and needed the patch in the first group, you should get this second patch as well. So the release candidate is going to be the last release prior to RTM bit, so there's not going to be any other pre-releases between now and then. It does have a go-live license, so people can use this for building production applications. But again, if you're one of these impacted users, you should definitely get that patch.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And speaking of configuring Visual Studio 2010 RC, one of the things that people have been asking questions about was VS 2010 RC released with SL3 support, but not with SL4 support.
Silverlight 4, right.
Silverlight 4 support, correct. What this site, and we have to say this is a hack and technically not officially supported.
That's
but what it does is add Silverlight support to Visual Studio 2010.
Silverlight 4 support for 2010. That's
correct.
Right. That's right. So
RC.
Yeah, you can go through the steps. Actually, it's not. So it's a Visual Studio 2010 RC, and I believe what they're doing is they're using the Silverlight 4 Beta 2 bits, and then they've wired that up to work with the Visual Studio 2010 RC. So it's a little bit of a hack. Some of the bits are older, but if you want to use Visual Studio 2010 RC, it's one way to do it.
Yeah, so your other options are, of course, Visual Studio 2008 and Visual Studio 2008 Beta 2.
That's a 2010 Beta 2. That's right.
2010 Beta 2.
Gotcha.
Of Silverlight 4.
And
Beta.
You done? Yeah, we finished? .net. And so on a related topic, getting Silverlight 3 to work with Visual Studio 2010, specifically on your team build server. So this is a great article that Martin Hinselwood put together. He's one of our Visual Studio MVPs. And what I like about it is not only is it helpful if you're trying to build Silverlight 3 projects on your build server, but he also goes step by step through his process of actually debugging the team build workflow. So he shows you screenshot after screenshot and shows you what he went through in order to make this work. So I thought it was a great article. Shows just how easy it is, or I wouldn't say easy, but all the information's there if you need to debug a team build workflow in 2010. So it's pretty cool. So what's new in 2010?
There are a ton of features that are new in Visual Studio 2010. We've talked about them. Certainly, big change in terms of extensibility, the editor experience, C++, which has had a number of changes where it has the new project system, things that people were familiar with before, MS Build. Now, there's plenty of ALM features as well, and we were just talking about our favorite features. What this document does, though, is it goes through all the new features in Visual Studio Pro and the ALM tools, Ultimate.
Right, and the .NET framework as well.
Yeah.
And so this is an article that's been actually on the MSDN library for a while, but Greg Duncan just linked to it this week, and we thought that it was worth mentioning here. So there's two versions, one for kind of the ALM capabilities and one for everything else.
Which is what I just said. Okay, good.
That is well, you know, people don't generally listen to what you say, so... It's our 100th episode. We're like a married couple. But anyway, check that out. Before the show, we were talking about some of the new debugging capabilities. So there's a ton of debugging features
that
you wouldn't know were there unless you went through a document like this. One of the things I like is the ability to export and import breakpoints. So let's say that you spend, 20 minutes getting your solution into a point where you've got all the breakpoints that are appropriate for diagnosing one particular problem, but you might want to share those breakpoints with another developer, or you might want to save those, go work on another set of problems, and then come back to those same set of breakpoints. Now it's easy to export those breakpoints and import them right back in. Of course, IntelliTrace, huge for software debugging as well. And so there's just a ton of stuff in here. So spend, 20, 30 minutes going through and learning about all the new toys you can play with in 2010.
Yeah, my favorite feature is actually another debugging feature, but when you're actually in it, you mouse over a variable, you'll be able to get the tooltip, but you can actually make it sticky. There's ability to add a push pin and actually add notes to that.
Yep.
So it's a very nice experience in terms of tooltips, and it kind of shows the future of what we could do in terms of visualization of data and sort of context aware.
That's right.
So
yeah,
very
so,
cool.
Very cool. So speaking of software testing of Visual Studio 2010, one of the things that we've talked about on the show before is the fact that we now support fully automated coded UI tests. So I can record a path through an application, I can add assertions, and then I can play that back. And we'll actually validate at the UI layer. We can do that for both Windows Forms applications, WPF applications, web applications. But the out-of-box support that we ship for that is currently based on Internet Explorer. So the really good news, though, is that the testing framework is extensible, so Microsoft will be shipping additional test packages, third parties can ship additional test packages, and the first down payment on that promise is the fact that, you're making fun of my vocabulary.
Down payment on a promise.
It's the fact that we now have a beta of support for Firefox. So if you're writing coded UI tests and you want to validate those in Firefox, which of course may render differently than IE and other browsers, then you can do that now. And then likewise, if you are doing manual testing and taking advantage of the fast forward for manual testing capability, this will also work with that as well.
And is this so? I see this is on the Visual Studio Gallery, which is the one place we talked about extensibility slightly, but Visual Studio Gallery being the place to download all extensions. Is this a Microsoft extension or a community extension?
This, my understanding is that this was built by Microsoft and being released by Microsoft.
Okay.
So I don't know.
I
don't know if there's a subcontracting deal in the works or anything like that, but it is being published by Microsoft. So.
And how much money do you get on every time it's mentioned?
We don't talk about that on the It's part of my contract.
Okay. Okay.
You think after 100 episodes you'd know these things?
I know. Sorry.
So, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, so one of the remote desktop applications, if you're a developer and you're building applications that are going to be accessed remotely, there's a number of things you can do to optimize how you design your WPF application in terms of ways to have settings within your animations, ways to have settings within your different visual states. What this allows you to do is actually see their guidance for how to optimize your WPF applications such that they'll work good over a remote desktop connection.
That's right. And the other nice thing about this article, too, is because the Visual Studio 2010 shell was built using mostly WPF in this release, if you connect to your developer desktop over a remote desktop, this has a number of techniques in there as well to help you tweak your remote desktop settings to give you the best experience when you're remoting into your developer desktop. So whether you're building WPF applications or just using Visual Studio 2010 remotely, this article is definitely a must-read. And so here's another topic that that's come up and been very popular in the past.
I know you love diff merge.
I do. I do love diff merge. And so the diffing and merging tools that ship with Visual Studio, even in 2010, are more or less the same diff and merge tools that existed in Visual Source Safe. So we haven't made a lot of investment in there. And when I talk to the TFS team, they say the primary reason for that is that there's a great market of third-party diffing and merging tools. Everyone kind of has their favorite. And it's very easy to swap in and out the diffing and merging tools of your choice. And so this article talks about how to do that with Visual Studio 2010, and specifically use SourceGear's diff merge, which is not only free, but it's also highly rated. So it's a good thing to do. Expression tutorials from Paolo Baroni. I'm sure we're messing up Paolo's name there.
Yeah, so if you are new to Expression Studio 3, you want to learn some of the key things. For example, Sketchflow is actually a pretty easy tool to use, but you may want to do some of the tips and tricks in terms of, hey, I have a page, and that page has a nav bar. And I want to have that nav bar across all these. This actually goes through how to design things within Sketchflow for reusability, for navigation, and then actually like when you're running through the project. One of my favorite features in Sketchflow actually is the ability to export your flow as a Word document. So it's like, oh, we're going to need some documentation.
Cool.
And what it does is it spits out the metadata of the project and a screenshot of every screen. So it actually looks like you did work.
Wow. Nice.
So, yeah, so somebody asked me for that, and I was like, oh, yeah, here's our 15-page documentation that I spent exactly 2 minutes on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Really cool.
My only nit on that is it doesn't actually go in the order of the sketch flow.
Oh,
it goes
okay.
in the order the pages were created, which is kind of funny.
Copy and paste.
But I'm sure there's a setting for it, so maybe I'll find it and or file a bug. So the other things here is, for example, if people haven't played with Deep Zoom.
That's right.
This is a this includes tutorials how to use Deep Zoom and a number of other expression features. So if you're looking to learn Expression Studio, there's a lot of good stuff here.
And I don't want to give away my pick of the week, but I might be talking about Deep Zoom in a little bit here. So more WPF love out there. So we love these Roundup articles. This is a WPF documentation samples Roundup.
WTF. You know how many people are trying to inside Microsoft ship WTF as their product?
That would be pretty cool.
Yes.
So anyway, not much to say other than the fact that if you're looking for a WPF sample, this is your one-stop shop.
Yeah, so this has everything from, you know, the new commanding syntax, input, animations, just a number of different things that if you were new to WPF, including the basics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So definitely check this out.
Yep. And yet another WPF.
I know, it's WPF week.
It is WPF week. And so this is a great article that's off of Learn WPF, and it's four tools that they themselves are open source and written with WPF, but they're also great tools for building WPF applications as well. So just a couple to mention, Kazaml, we've talked about Kazaml on the show before. Snoop, he calls this the firebug for WPF.
Firebug for WPF, there you go.
That's pretty awesome.
Now, I want to know if they have a Silverlight version. That's my goal. Without having
question.
To use Silverlight Spy, something that we have covered on the show, but it is charges for money. So I want the Snoop version. I want Firebug for Silverlight, and I want it to be free.
Okay,
get on that.
All right, I'll
What's
get
your
right
problem?
On that.
What are you doing?
Let me just mention one more. This is Inkscape, which is an open source vector graphics editor. So whether you're building WPF applications or Silverlight applications or even just any applications that can consume vector graphics, that seems like a good tool to have in your toolkit. So NASA Contest. Pathfinder
yeah.
Innovation Challenge. So we don't, there's dozens
Tell me
of,
about this.
There's so many like contests and challenges that we've kind of made it a policy.
We're the contest machine.
We don't really cover contests a lot, but I thought this one was particularly cool. For starters, you know, it's Mars, so that's just cool in and of itself. But, you know, the Pathfinder, the rovers that are up there on Mars, they were only supposed to be there for something like 60 days, and I think it's been like 2 or 3 years that they've been up there.
Mm.
So they've long exceeded their mission, and so they just
kind of like
on.
You at Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah. Ouch. So they just keep on sending back images, and so now NASA's got this huge repository of images, and they want your help to actually help them process that. And so there's two ways of doing that. One is to enter what's called the Intelligence League and build an application that does image recognition of these images and counts the number of craters that are out there.
Sure.
I don't know why it's so important to know the number of craters out there, but must be. Like if we're getting ready
they're
to
doing
colonize,
cartography.
They
know.
Are, yeah. You know, they're doing street planning, like where they're going to put down the
yeah, exactly
you know, the telephone poles, stuff like that. But then the other one, I thought this was really cool. It's called the Global Cooperation League, and in this one, what they want you to do is build games that get people to go through and count the number of craters on these images as well. And so presumably they will be comparing the results that they get from one to the other to try and come up with some happy medium of what the actual score is. But it's kind of like building the Mechanical Turk that Amazon has, where
sure.
you just get lots and lots of people, cheap labor, to do manual tasks and just go through and process these images. So
now, one note, you want to talk about
Yeah, so this is pretty cool. So Doug Seven, a lot of people know, he's on the Visual Studio marketing team. He actually has, I don't know if it's a mountain or a rock or a hill, I don't know, something named after him on Mars, because his brother is on the team that sends all the commands that pilot these rovers.
Mm-hmm.
And after, you know, their mission got extended, they just started running out of names to actually assign to these various, you know, features on Mars. And so they named one of these rocks or something Mount Seven. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So if you're looking for something for your wife for your anniversary,
they should raffle it off.
They totally should. Like, they sell the names of stars and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See that mountain? Yeah. That crater? Yeah. That's Mount Niner.
We should do that. Sponsor Mountain on Mars.
Picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
For our 100th episode.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Getting a little. I cry enough on video. TechFest was this week, and there were a number of cool technologies shown. We have so certainly the research team did a bunch of videos. Laura's done a bunch of videos. Some of my favorites, Project Gustav, which is a way to paint. So I was showing you the video a little earlier, but it's a gorgeous sort of canvas style app, and such that you can actually physically see a paintbrush, twist a paintbrush, get the edges. There's a blending brush. I mean, it really looks like you are painting on a canvas, and it works both with regular mouse input and with touch input as well. So you can do things like use your finger to blend paint. But it's an absolutely gorgeous experience. And then the other one is the translating telephone. The idea being, and again, this is more research concept, but such that I talk, it changes that to speech and then actually retranslates so that you are hearing a voice. So,
sí, comprendo, sí.
Exactly.
Muy bien.
And this can have hilarious side effects sometimes when I'm sure you've done the translate and then translate again. But shows a lot of promise and shows a really cool experience of just being able to do, say, and in this case, I think it's only working English to German, but you can definitely check that out. So,
I think what's especially cool about this is that TechFest used to be a closed door Microsoft only event, and over the years they've just been really kind of peeling back the curtain and showing more and more of this technology to the outside world. And
sure.
So, I think a couple of years ago was the first time that they actually let press into a secluded area, and now they're making even the entire keynote, you can go watch online from Rick Rashid.
So. Yeah, and to be clear though, it's not all things at
TechFest. Not everything. But,
yeah, we still
it's
have
some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so my pick of the week, this is, if anyone follows my blog, I actually posted about this week. This is, speaking of Deep Zoom, a few months ago I was looking for a better way to actually tell our Visual Studio 2010 testing story. And so one of the things I find is that, you know, you walk into a room and you may not know your audience until a few minutes before the session, and then you find out, okay, these are manual testers you're talking to, or they're CIOs. And the presentation you create or present to them might be totally different from one to the next. And so PowerPoint, I love it, but it doesn't do a good job of helping you break out of that linear presentation style. And so I had seen a couple of people do things similar to this approach by building deep zooms that you can use to actually zoom in and out of different levels of detail. And I wanted to create one of those for myself. But the challenge is that the deep zoom support that's provided in Microsoft Expression, it spits out a bunch of XAML and all of your composition objects, but it doesn't allow you to easily embed things like videos. And so I went to a local vendor, actually he's been on the show before, Ed Keim, and I said, hey, here's my challenge. I want to be able to create these, I want to be able to maintain these, but I don't have time to do a lot of, you know, low-level coding in order to insert videos and update them every time. So what his company did is they launched a solution called SpeakFlow, and SpeakFlow allows you to take a PowerPoint deck, you then add annotations to mark up each slide in the speaker notes to say exactly what X, Y coordinate and Z position you want that slide to sit at. And what you get is a composition here. So what I could do is actually drill in. I can drill into any given area. And what you don't see down here is that a few of these are videos as well. So I can embed videos. And let's say that, you know, I'm presenting and on the fly I decide that one of the things you're really interested in is the lab management workflow piece. I can zoom right into that and then start talking about whatever needs to happen. So I found this a great way of presenting. It really lights up the capabilities of Deep Zoom, of Silverlight, and also allows me to talk about my own technology as well.
So I know we shouldn't, you know, we're not wholly plugging this, but this is capable for other people to build stuff. There is a free option.
That's right. There's an express version and a professional version, and you can go to speakflow.com and start building your own content right away.
Okay, I think we're going to do one for the show and then have some videos, and it's like, Dan Fan Club, and then it's like a little corner, it's like, Brian Fan Club. gonna be awesome.
Nice, nice. So that's it. That's our 100th episode, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, and we got some clips, kind of giving you what it's like when we prepare.
We are professionals.
Yeah, so, and yeah. This is across several episodes, so kind of a.
So stick around till after the credits and enjoy.
And you get to watch our producer, Michael O'Neill.
So, what's it like to work with those guys? Brian seems nice. Yeah, they think that they're professional.
Yeah,
I didn't think they'd make it to 100 episodes.
Look at my wingspan. I'm like John Wingfield here. Who has the bigger wingspan?
You do. You're taller. And welcome. Come on. Let's get it together. Get it together. Let's go.
So, I've been here since 2 o'clock, in case you didn't hear. Okay.
Why does the audio suck on this one?
That was probably really loud. And welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Geller.
What the f*** is wrong with us? I don't know who's going to get the Petco gift card this Christmas. Why is it so hard to work here? Is it Michael? You have a problem being here because of Michael?
Don't make him say that.
No. No.
It's so shady. I'm like a creeper, dude.
Yeah, you are a creeper.
And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Geller. I'm Deborah.
Stop it!
Anybody hear anything weird?
Five show suspension for you, man.
Don't mind me.
Okay.
Hello. Hello. No. No. Oh, I'm so scared.
I'm shrinking my nose.
And you about finished? Are we done?